Welcome to the Eurovision Travel Guide. In this monthly series, we're going to be exploring a country in the Eurovision Song Contest, learning about some of their entries, their national selection methods, and some other noteworthy points. This month, we are taking a look at Poland. This is ESC 101. Dzień dobry, dobry dzień, dobry wieczór, witamy o ESC 101, toż do historii Eurovizji. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 25. My name is Alexander. There's a few things I'd like to mention before we begin today's episode. First, a happy 6-month anniversary of ESC 101. This milestone completely slipped my mind and should have been mentioned 2 episodes ago, but I guess when putting together episodes becomes this enjoyable, time just flies by and I forget how much time has passed. It doesn't feel like it's been 6 months, and of course, I have you to thank. You, who are currently listening to this episode on whichever platform you're on. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your interest in Eurovision history and my perspective on that history. Simply, thank you. The second thing I would like to thank you for is your participation in our Spotify polls. I'm still learning about exactly how they work, so I don't know if you can see the overall results of the polls, so I thought I would catch up on the ones we've done so far. Going back to episode 13, the poll results show that you weren't interested in watching the Junior Eurovision Song Contest 2023, but you were definitely interested in listening to me talk about it. As of the recording of this episode, we had 45 downloads of part 1 of our JESC 2023 coverage, and 37 downloads of part 2. Those are my 2nd and 4th highest downloaded episodes, respectively. I honestly wasn't expecting such a huge reception of Junior Eurovision, but I'm happy to offer my take on the entries and the show. Of course, on our bonus reaction to the Czech national final, we had a tie on our poll asking for your favorite, and it was between Midi and Jian Li. Moving forward to episode 15, you voted for Michel Tour's 1977 entry for Monaco as your favorite, and I can definitely see why. Episode 16 was our travel guide episode for Croatia, and it was an even split on the question of having been to Croatia, yes or no. Episode 17 featured the Wombles, and you agreed with me not knowing who the Wombles were before Eurovision, so I'm glad I'm not the only one. Episode 18 covered the hotly debated postcards of the 1991 contest, and a majority of you agreed that my rants were justified. I take geographic representation seriously, and I admit I'm fully capable of making mistakes. However, I'm not a national broadcaster with dozens of employees being able to fact-check the origins of monuments. Moving swiftly along to episode 19, and it seems that you prefer a more professional tone to hosting the contest, as opposed to Desiree's more casual tone, which I can appreciate. Episode 21 had us exploring the Eurovision Song Contest in the year 2100 with Jack and Justin of the Mates in Space podcast, and you shared our desire to put Eurovision on the moon. Maybe one day we'll reach out to the stars and allow aliens from Sigma 5 to vote in the contest. Episode 22 looked at the philosophical Ship of Theseus question and whether the band La Decada, that exists today, is the same as the one in 1988, despite having no original members from that era. Apparently, it was a unanimous vote for agreeing that La Decada in 2024 is the same as the one in 1988, so I stand corrected in the court of public opinion. Our bonus episode on the Eurosong 2024, which is Ireland's national final, has Ailsa and Next in Line tied for your top pick, but you have until the end of February to cast your vote if you haven't already done so. And finally, the latest poll as of the recording of this episode was from episode 23, where you told us that you have not yet visited Avro Studios in Hilversum, and a majority of you would like to visit the venue one day. If you haven't managed to vote in our Spotify polls, you can still do some in the later polls, and I'll remind you at the end of today's episode to do so. A final note before we begin the episode, of course, with most Eurovision travel guides that have more than 10 entries, I will not be commenting on every single entry. Otherwise, this will turn into a several-hour-long episode. Instead, I encourage you to check out the 12 Points podcast's Eurovision Forever project, hosted by former co-host Jack Eaton, the same Jack Eaton from Mates in Space, and the current host Elizabeth Allen. They, along with yours truly, who tabulated all the scores, went through every single entry in the contest from 1956 until 2022. I'll leave a link to the Polish episodes on our show notes page where you can catch their reactions to the entries as well as their personal scores. With that being said, let's dive into Poland at the Eurovision Song Contest. Poland, officially known as Rzeczpospolita Polska, or in English, the Republic of Poland, is located in Central Europe. It borders Germany and Czechia to the west, Slovakia to the south, Ukraine and Belarus to the east, and Lithuania and Kaliningrad, which is an oblast of Russia, to the north. Poland also shares a maritime border with Denmark and Sweden. Poland has a population of 38 million people with a land area of around 312,696 square kilometers, or around 120,733 square miles. The capital city is Warsaw, and unfortunately, around 85% of its buildings were ruined during the Second World War, and much of what you see when you visit the capital are reconstructions. Not to say that they're any less beautiful or historically significant. On the contrary, it's a testament to the priority that Polish people held regarding their history. There's just so many historic sites to see, including universities, art galleries, and a beautiful old town. Poland joined the European Union in 2004 and the Schengen zone in 2007. However, they do not use the euro. Rather, they use the Polish złoty, which one złoty working out to around 33 cents Canadian, 25 cents American, 23 euro cents, or 20 pence. Poland is also a founding member of the United Nations and joined NATO in 1999. Now, Poland's history dates back over 1,000 years, and with a deeply complicated history, I'm going to be skimming over very large parts of it so you get the basic picture of Poland's place in Europe. For our purposes, Poland's history starts in 966 with the baptism of Poland, where the first ruler of the Polish state, Mieszko I, was converted to Christianity and thus was recognized as the Duchy of Poland. Sounds eerily like Croatia's history, with the country existing because the Pope said so. I imagine we'll find a lot of that throughout European history in this period. Mieszko I dies, and his son Boleslaw I becomes the next Duke of Poland, and manages to secure an agreement with the Holy Roman Emperor to allow him to gain more power in his territory, and with permission from Pope John XIX, was crowned King of Poland in 1025. Why does Poland magically go from a duchy to a kingdom? Because the Pope said so, just like Croatia in the 9th century. However, this celebration doesn't last long, as Boleslaw I dies and his son Mieszko II inherits and is forced to flee the country in 1031 due to peasant uprisings that were rooted in pagans not being happy with the Christianization of Poland. Turns out forcing religion onto people isn't the best way to create a happy and stable kingdom. The kingdom ended up splintering, and after a few invasions and some political shenanigans, Boleslaw III Wormuth managed to restore the territorial integrity of Poland, but was not able to obtain the crown due to interference from the Holy Roman Empire. What a surprise. Poland was left in a broken state for over 200 years, being divided into duchies, and was almost unified in the 13th century. However, the Mongol invasions prevented that from happening. We skip forward to 1382, when King Louis I of Hungary, who was King of Poland since 1370, ended up dying and his daughter took the throne as Queen of Poland. Her advisors entered into negotiations with the Duke of Lithuania, where he pledged to convert to Christianity and signed the Union of Krewo in 1385, marrying the Queen of Poland and beginning a new dynasty as King Władysław II. Poland transforms into a crown of the Kingdom of Poland. Strange title, but it basically signifies that Poland no longer was property of the monarch, but rather belonged to the common good of the political community of the Polish kingdom. It's complicated and beyond my scope of understanding, so I'll just move on. At this point, Poland is ruled by the same man who rules over Lithuania, entering into a personal union, meaning that the two states shared a monarch but were distinct separate kingdoms. Almost 200 years later, in 1569, the Union of Lublin created the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. This also transformed the crown into an elective monarchy, similar to France electing its king, as mentioned in the Travel Guide episode for France. Speaking of France, shortly after this union took place, Henry de Valois was elected king. His name sounds very French, and that's because he would later become King of France just a few months after he was crowned King of Poland and Grand Duke of Lithuania. This didn't last very long, as a year later, Henry became bored with Poland and Lithuania and just decided to abandon them, which seems silly, but I guess there were 16th century reasons for doing so. Fast forward another 100 years, and the Commonwealth introduces the dumbest political shenanigan in democratic existence. And I'm including current political shenanigans in certain Western countries. During the reign of King Władysław IV, a political concept called Liberum Veto was introduced. This was principled on the concept of unanimous consent, where all noblemen were considered equal, and a decision taken by a majority against the minority, even if it was only one person, was a violation of political equality, as the minority's voice would be ignored for the majority. In modern democracies, the majority voice rules. If you're in the minority of an opinion, you may not like it, but that's what it is. That gives you the motivation which spurs on political discussion. If you don't like the way things work, you go out and convince enough people to side with you and make that change. Of course, it isn't perfect and it invites potential corruption, but it's the system where large parts of the Western world operate. But that isn't how it works in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth in the 17th century. Even if one person doesn't agree with a bill, they can just say no, and it's immediately defeated. You think current parliamentary systems in Western countries are divisive? You haven't seen anything yet. It gets wilder. Not only can legislation be rejected by just one person, legislation that has already been passed can be nullified after the fact so long as it's in the same session. Say as an example that the legislature passes a bill that allows for clean drinking water for all citizens. A servant later comes by to offer you a glass of water because you're parched from all the debating. The servant is clumsy and spills the water all over your new clothes. You become so angry at the incident that you decide to declare war on water, and you don't want clean drinking water in the hands of citizens. What if more clothes get ruined by the peasantry? The horror! But alas, you just agreed to allow everyone clean drinking water. In a normal democracy, that's the end of the discussion. However, in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, there are take-backsies. Literally. All you have to do is shout, Sisto activatium, and bam! You magically nullified the legislation and everyone goes back to drinking dirty water. You've done it. Seriously, it is the dumbest mechanism to exist in a democratic society. Imagine if you had that in current democratic systems. Legislation would pass, then you could just shout the magic words and undo all the hard work that was done. While it would probably make you unpopular amongst the nobles, I know of a few people who would be petty enough to just keep vetoing legislation. It's hard enough to get a room of people to agree on almost anything, but then allowing just one person to change their mind and nullify newly made laws is just so unbelievable. This was especially problematic when foreign powers would bribe officials to paralyze proceedings, allowing for external manipulations. Of course, I am overly simplifying Liberum Veto, and I'm sure political history people would comment and correct and expand on my explanation, but suffice to say, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth is at its most vulnerable state. And of course, people take advantage of the system. Attempts were made to limit the veto, but the whole concept was abolished in 1791 with the creation of Europe's first codified constitution. However, they were too late, as foreign interference was too deeply rooted in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. Want to take a wild stab in the dark to see which country was involved? If you guessed Russia, you'd be right. The Russian Tsar effectively chose the monarchs and decided the outcome of internal politics. Russia's growing influence meant that rival monarchies were vying for power, and already neighboring powers were taking off parts of the Commonwealth as part of their victories against the fractured Commonwealth. The territory was partitioned a total of 3 times, slowly carving up the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth until it literally no longer existed, with territories being taken by the Habsburg Monarchy, the Kingdom of Prussia, and the Russian Empire. This means that the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth ceased to exist in 1795. Polish history gets mixed in with German and Russian history, so we'll fast forward to the end of World War I, when Poland magically appears on European maps everywhere as the Republic of Poland. This lasts until, take a wild guess, you're right, World War II! Actually, World War II started because of Germany's invasion of Poland, which is really eerie. And ignoring the fact that the Soviet Union also invaded Poland under a joint pact with Germany, we're just going to forget that little fact. The country was eventually restored at the end of the war. From 1945 until 1947, Poland existed under a provisional government backed by the Soviet Union. There was a government in exile based in London during the war, but they could not return to Poland as the Soviets decided that they weren't needed and they just installed a communist government instead. Why am I not surprised? The exiled government continued to claim that they were the legitimate government of Poland, similar to China during the period with the Republic claiming ownership of the land controlled by the communist forces. Communist Poland continued until 1989, when a revolution and a presidential election removed communist elements from the country, prompting a shift in ideology. However, the socialist structure wasn't entirely abolished until 1997, when the newly created Polish constitution managed to replace the old socialist-style system with the current parliamentary-style system. At the end of the communist rule in Poland, the government in exile formally transferred its insignia and responsibilities onto the newly created government at a special ceremony at the end of 1990, and the liquidation of its apparatus was completed on December 31, 1991. And since then, we have the Poland that we know and love today. In terms of the Eurovision Song Contest, Poland's history goes back to 1965. If you remember episode 12 when we covered Czechia in the Eurovision Travel Guide series, their start with Eurovision also began in 1965 as a result of a deal struck with OIRT, the Eastern equivalent of the EBU. Executives at the EBU convinced those at OIRT that the contest was apolitical, as it did not promote ideologies or politics, rather it simply promoted music and culture. Of course, we laugh at that very notion now, but it was a real problem for Eastern Bloc countries and their perceptions of the West. OIRT agreed for the contest to be broadcasted to select countries, and Poland was one of the countries to watch Eurovision for the first time in 1965. However, if we go back 4 years earlier, we discover something quite fascinating. In 1961, Poland hosted its very own international televised music competition. It's called the Sopot International Song Festival, and it goes through a few name changes over the years, including a brief period in the 1970s when it becomes the Intervision Song Contest. That's right, the Eastern version of the Eurovision Song Contest originates in Poland. Now, I could launch an entire podcast about the Intervision Song Contest, but instead, I'll reserve a future episode to talk more about it later. Suffice to say, Poland is no stranger to international song contests, and the Sopot International Song Festival continues to this day under a different name as the Top of the Top Sopot Festival, the latest edition occurring in August of 2023. Poland ends up joining the European Broadcasting Union in 1993, shortly after the end of communist rule. OIRT was dissolved on January 1, 1991, and memberships of several countries covered under OIRT were added to the EBU, including Poland. However, unlike many Eastern European countries, Poland never attempted to join Eurovision through the Kwalifikacja za Mill Street semifinal. I tried looking for any sources to see if they had any interest in joining the contest in 1993, but I found nothing that mentioned Poland whatsoever, so for unknown reasons, Poland decided to wait until 1994 to debut at the contest. Poland has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest on 25 occasions since their debut in 1994. They missed out on 4 contests, being relegated in 2000 and 2002, and withdrawing in 2012 and 2013 due to, quote, financial reasons. Poland has been in the grand final 16 times, with 7 of those being qualifications, or 8 if you count 1996's pre-qualification round as a semifinal, which I do, so 8 it is. They've reached the top 10 on 3 occasions and the top 5 on 1 occasion, reaching 2nd place on debut. Poland has sent a majority of their entries in either Polish or English, with 7 entries containing mixed languages, including German, Spanish, and Russian. Poland has only 1 returning artist, with Ich Treue, the band that represented Poland in 2003, also representing Poland in 2006. We begin our journey of Poland at Eurovision in 1994, where Poland found immediate success, earning their highest placement to date. Edita Górniak's entry Toneja was internally selected. Interestingly, another Edita was internally selected. This was Edita Bartoszewicz, but apparently she thought she was too good for Eurovision, as she felt, quote, "Eurovision does not fit into her artistic aesthetics." Pardon me for saying this, but she is out of her mind. Eurovision fits literally everyone's artistic aesthetics. There is every genre, every style, every nonsensical dance move imaginable, yet somehow artists can continue to bring new things to the Eurovision stage each year. This year alone, we have so many mind-boggling entries. Bambi Thug's Doomsday Blue is just an example of one of the most unusual entries that I've seen in a long time. So to say it doesn't fit your artistic aesthetics, that opinion is trash and incorrect. Thank goodness that the Polish broadcaster had a backup plan, because the Edita that agreed to go to Eurovision did an incredible job. Here's a sample of Poland's debut at the contest. The entry itself is light, airy, and fitting for the 90s. I will say her outfit was a poor choice. It looks like she's wearing a plain nightgown, but her voice is gorgeous and I love her hairstyle. Of course, countries on debut are a bit of a wild card. Some countries get it right away, and others struggle. Poland on debut got it right away, and it was sad to see that they haven't reached a top 5 in recent years. Unfortunately for Poland, this success doesn't last, as the results plummeted into the high teens. For the remainder of the 20th century, Poland internally selects their entries, and they're either pretty unremarkable or literally painful to listen to. I'm not subjecting you to the screeching of 1995, I'm just going to move straight into the 21st century, as Poland was relegated in the year 2000 due to their poor results. If you're not aware, when a country is relegated, that means that they are forced out of the contest by taking the point total average over 5 contests and removing countries who have the worst averages. For the contest in the year 2000, the 24 participants were made up of the previous year's winning country, the Big Four, consisting of UK, Germany, Spain, and France, the 13 countries which had obtained the highest average point total over the preceding 5 contests, and any eligible countries which did not compete in the 1999 contest. Poland has had the second lowest average that year at 27.2 points per contest. This system, in my opinion, is absolute trash because it doesn't take withdrawals into account when calculating the averages. For example, Lithuania was another country that was relegated in 2000. They withdrew from 1995 to 1998, so their average is calculated based off of one contest, 1999, where they got 13 points. So Lithuania's average was 13 points, and they had the worst average. In what universe is that a fair judgment for Lithuania? If you have to use this system, calculate the averages of the last 5 contests that they participated in. And if they've been to less than 5 contests, then stick them in with the remaining eligible countries that didn't participate in 1999. Relegation systems are just a nightmare. I'm moving on to 2001, where they internally select Piasek with the song Too Long, with the 2 being the number 2, not the word 2. Weirdly enough, the Polish broadcaster announced the Polish entry on the 2nd of March. another two. And weirder still, they translated the song from Polish into English. The song was originally called Skim Sztakim, which in English translates as with someone like... I don't know why they changed the title of the entry. This, however, was not Poland's first choice. Again, as the broadcaster initially selected a different song and wanted to do a duet with Piazek and Natalia Kukulska. However, due to artistic disagreements, whatever that means, the proposal was rejected and Piazek went solo. Here is Poland's first pure English entry, Too Long. You don't have to ask, I'll tell you all the reasons about me. Cards are on a table, and I have will a land to hide. These feelings deep inside, I know the honesty within is nothing when you cry. This entry has a lot of problems, from the misplaced attitude of the singer to that horrible fur coat and that terrible belt. Look, I think it's fun to listen to, but I don't recommend this entry in large doses. The backing singers bring a good vocal element to the entry, but the stage looks so empty it practically swallows the singer into a dark abyss. Lyrics of the song confirms the misplaced attitude of the singer. Quoting from the Diggaloo Thresh website, they read, "If you don't get too close, you won't see the joke. Maybe everything looks so cool, maybe I'm just foolin'. When I'm almost out the door, you're still smiling, so hey, I'm thinking just the same. Better if you think again. Yeah, I'm not getting close to this entry because you, sir, are a joke. And I'm moving on to 2002, where Poland is punished for sending this nonsense to Eurovision and are relegated once again. 2003 comes around and Poland is back into the contest. Rather than using another internal selection, which hasn't been working well for them, Poland decides to use a national final. The name of the national final is, and please bear with me with my Polish, Krajowe Eliminacje do Konkursu Piosenki Eurowizji 2006. Or in English, National Qualifications for the Eurovision Song Contest 2003. Seriously, naming schemes. Find one and use it. At least they managed to use the national final with a pure public televote, so the people had the choice on who to send. 43 entries were submitted, with a 6-person committee narrowing it down to 15. However, scandal erupts as one of the entrants pulls a Sandra Kim and lies about her age. For those who don't know, Sandra Kim won the contest in 1986 and lied about her age, being the youngest person to win the contest. The singer Georgina Tarasiuk was disqualified because she would not be at least 16 years old on the day of the contest, which is the minimum age to participate in the contest. I'll do an episode on children performing in the adult contest before the age rule was properly installed, because there are a surprising number of children on the Eurovision stage in the 20th century. The national final was a success, and Itch Troje won with the song Kein Grenzen, ja nik granic, translated as No Borders in German and Polish. Here's a sample of that entry. Żadnych bojen, żadnych państw, kein Kriege, kann man dort von oben sehen. Bezgraniczny, bezgraniczny, mir bez Frage, mir bez Frage, słyszę tych granic. There is a lot to take in with this entry, from the really questionable fashion choices to the hair color choices to the overall package. Weirdly enough, the male vocalist runs off the stage near the end of the song and goes to an island platform, which I didn't know they had in 2003. His voice is very rapsy and the female vocalist is light, but this feels like a repeat of 2001. Male vocalist with neon colored hair and ridiculous outfit. Female vocalist in a similarly ridiculous outfit. And a song that I simply don't understand because I don't speak Polish, but the translated title of the song is pretty indicative of the meaning, No Borders. The Schengen zone was established in 1995, which removed internal border checkpoints and essentially removed borders within Europe. What's fascinating is that Poland signed the Schengen zone agreement in April of 2003. Then a month later, this song arrives on the Eurovision stage calling for no borders. Poland doesn't actually implement the policy until the end of 2007, so perhaps they were really impatient and wanted the Schengen policy implemented immediately. Apparently, Europe agreed with Poland as they reached 7th place, which is their second highest placement to date. And because they reached the top 10 in 2003, they didn't have to participate in the semi-final in 2004. They kept the same national final and voting format, simply changing the date to 2004. Poland ended up sending what I can only describe as a cheap 99-cent karaoke song with no heart or soul in the performance, which is ironic, considering the entry is called Love Song, sung by Blue Café. Yet another duo. They placed 17th, and I'm not subjecting you to their mediocrity, so I'm moving on. 2005 comes along, and Poland decides to ditch the national final. I don't blame them for doing that, and went with an internal selection. Sadly, they didn't qualify in 2005, and Poland had a metaphorical heart attack, and went immediately back to a national final in 2006, using a new show and format called Piosenka dla Europy 96, translated as Song for Europe 2006. A 50-50 voting system was used, consisting of a 6-person jury and a public vote. They used this system until 2009, and they only qualify once in 2008 using this national final. However, their non-qualifications were narrow, earning 11th place in 2005 and 6. Their qualification in 2008 was also by a very narrow margin, as they placed 10th in the semifinal. The system used in 2008, which is, in my view, incredibly dumb, was to allow the top 9 in the semifinal to qualify, and the 10th qualifier would be a backup jury qualifier. This system essentially didn't matter for Poland in its semifinal, as Poland was 10th in the semifinal, and the jury selected Poland to advance. So basically, in that semifinal, it was the top 10, which is what we do today, so no harm done for Poland. In 2010, having faced so many non-qualifications in such a short period of time, Poland decides to use yet another new show and format. They use the show Krajowe Eliminacje Dewatechon Sejeszenj, National Qualifications 2010. This is the same title and format as 2003, minus the For the Eurovision Song Contest part. Seriously, we need a contest for who has the worst national final names. I think Poland is winning at the moment. This also fails to get Poland to the grand final in both 2010 and 2011. And when countries do so poorly at the contest, what do you think happens? Do they go back to square one and come up with a new and innovative formula to create an engaging and relatable entry? Of course not. Poland throws a temper tantrum and withdraws. They claim it's because they had to organize the European Football Championship 2012, which they were technically hosting. I suppose that's a legitimate reason, but in my opinion, I think they were skulking over their poor results and used this as a scapegoat excuse. When countries withdraw due to, quote, financial reasons, sometimes it is a budgetary issue, but sometimes it's also, we're not doing well and we need to take a break. They also skipped in 2013, and after 2 years of no Eurovision, Poland got up from its pity party, dusted itself off, and sent the full force of the Polish people to Eurovision and sent their most iconic entry to date. 2014 comes around, and Poland's broadcaster sends Donatan and Cleo with the song My Słowani, We Are Slavic. Although they say they sent Donatan and Cleo, but Donatan was nowhere to be found on stage. It was just Cleo and her backing dancers and vocalists. I have a pet peeve with music acts whose names are in the entry but they don't appear on the stage. Donatan is the arranger of the entry, that's fine, but you can't just put your name on the entry and not appear on stage. So while officially the act is called Donatan and Cleo, for my purpose, it's just Cleo. But Donatan's lack of appearance on stage is forgiven for the sheer craziness of this entry. If you haven't seen this entry, I advise a little bit of parental caution, as there are some suggestive movements which, while they don't cross to adult territory, as Eurovision doesn't allow nudity or explicit lyrics, there is a woman washing clothes in a provocative manner, and another woman churning butter, again in a provocative manner. The song celebrates the Slavic roots of Polish culture and uses quite intricate patterns and traditional Polish symbolism in the clothes, performance, and the backing LED wall. It's a great entry and a wonderful example of showcasing culture with a little cheek. Here's a sample of the entry. Overall, it's a good entry, and it brought Poland back into the grand final, and with an entry that is as iconic as this, it's well-deserved. Poland repeated their internal selection for 2015 and ended up sending Monika Kuzinska, who was, as far as I know, the first wheelchair user to make it to the Eurovision stage. Her entry was entitled In the Name of Love. Monika ended up placing 23rd in the grand final out of 27 entries, and it's a shame this entry came so low. This did worse than Cyprus, which I thought had no business qualifying, but I admire Monika's voice, and I'm happy to see equal opportunity for those with disabilities to bring themselves and their country to the Eurovision stage. I like this entry. It has good sound and a good message. Enjoying their streak of qualification, Poland decides to bring back their national final from 2011. However, controversy abounds, with the Polish government proposing a media law, which was perceived by some as the government interfering with the freedom of the press. Something important to remember, Eurovision is made up of national broadcasters, not governments or heads of state. It's not the Polish government that's participating, it's the Polish broadcaster. This new proposed law would have potentially allowed the government to replace the head of its public broadcaster directly and have a deeper hand in running the broadcaster, which has a risk of turning the broadcaster into a propaganda machine for the government. The EBU dispelled the rumors of expulsion and said that Poland's participation was not in question. Poland went ahead and used their national final format in 2016, 17, and 18, enjoying qualification in 2016 and 17, but failing to qualify in 2018, which caused some panic in Poland, and in 2019, they turned to internal selection to choose their entry. Unfortunately for 2019, Poland lost out on qualification by just 2 points, and there were rumors among fans which suggested that individual jurors may have made errors in their scoring, but of course that is all rumor and not factually proven, so we move on to the 2020s. Of course, as you already know, the contest in 2020 was cancelled, and while Poland held a national final for 2020, selecting Alicia with the song Empires, Poland does, in my opinion, the incorrect move and does not allow Alicia to return to the contest in 2021, instead internally selecting Rafał with The Ride. Now, I really don't like the performance live on stage, but I do enjoy the studio track. It's a solid dance track with plenty of 80s vibes, but the live performance just feels like a grown man trying to act like he's 16, and it just does not work on stage. This didn't qualify, and it was a deserved non-qualification. He looks like he's too old to be doing anything with this song, and considering he's a television presenter, there is little charisma with this performance. Poland, however, redeems themselves with their jury vote in the grand final, and I'll play this clip to explain.
Okay, and now, the 12 points from the Polish national jury go to... San Marino!
San Marino, 12 points! La République de Saint-Marin, 12 points!
And now we have San Marino. Good evening, Monika Fabry.
That's right, the Polish national jury gave us 12 points San Marino! Yes, their first ever 12 points in the grand final, and I was overjoyed to have this moment in my life. It's adjacent to Poland, so I can put this San Marinese moment in the episode and still be technically on topic for Poland. Of course, the spokesperson's outfit is hideous. I just can't look at it for very long, but I don't care because San Marino got 12 points from Poland. However, this joy does not last. As Poland decides to break my linguistic skills and return to a national final with such a complicated looking title. I'm using Google Translate's voice to say this one because I'm done trying to insult Polish people with my terrible Polish language skills. In 2022 and 2023, they used the national final called
Tu bije serce Europy. Wybieramy hit na Eurowizję.
Which translates to The Heart of Europe Beats Here. We are choosing a hit for Eurovision. At least the name is interesting, and the voting system is also interesting, at least in 2022. It's super complicated, so I'm just going to directly quote the Wikipedia page for the 2022 National Final voting system. Quote, 10 songs competed in one show where the winner was determined over two rounds of voting. In both rounds, each juror distributed 100 points among all entries competing in both rounds, with the sum of all jury scores being converted into percentages, while viewers were able to cast a single vote via SMS. In the event of a tie, the tie would be decided in favor of the jury. Following the voting in the first round, the percentages of the non-qualified were revealed and the top three acts progressed to the second round. Thankfully, in 2023, they threw away that voting nonsense and returned to a 50-50 voting system with juries and a televote. However, this comes with another controversy. Scandal hitting the Eurovision selection process? Who would have thought such a thing could happen? In 2023, there were accusations made against the broadcaster and jury which alleged that deals were made with Blanka, the winner of the national final. Apparently, she was heavily promoted, and viewers accused the jury of intentionally lowering the score of the audience's favorite. Now, this wasn't helped by the broadcaster's unwillingness to be transparent with the results, simply stating that the voting results were followed and supervised by a notary present during the final. Look, I have my fair share of accusations, like San Marino was robbed, these juries' votes are nonsense, the public have lost their minds, etc., etc. Now, I can't confirm or deny any shenanigans that took place, so I simply leave it there and instead play a sample of Blanka's entry, Solo. This entry is very summery, as in it reflects the season of summer. Californian heat with palm trees. I will say, the song grew on me. She looks great, outfit as hideous as usual, and it becomes a meme in some Eurovision circles, especially the way she sings the word baby, to make it sound like... It reminds me of Britney Spears in the early 2000s and her pronunciation of the word, but she is no Britney Spears. She is Blanka. And while I won't blank this song from my playlist, it's no winner in my opinion. Poland's selection for 2024 turns internal, mostly because of what took place in 2023. Hopefully, starting in 2025, they can get over the controversy and return to a national final system. I'm curious to see who they're going to be sending, and of course, I'll be reviewing their entrant along with other competing entries in a special series of episodes in April and May. Before we conclude the episode, let's take a look at some of the voting statistics. Looking at the voting system used in the grand final between 1975 and 2015, Poland received the most points from Germany with 56 points given, Austria with 34 points given, and France with 31. Honestly, this doesn't surprise me with Germany being Poland's neighbor and Austria being somewhat geographically close to Poland. When looking at the points Poland gave in the grand final, it tells a little bit of a different story. They gave the most points to Ukraine, giving them 83 points, followed by Norway with 63, and third is Sweden with 62. Germany is just behind, getting fourth place with 53. Looking at the numbers, from Ukraine's debut in 2003 all the way to 2015, Poland always gives Ukraine points, which is fascinating to see. Poland ends up giving the winning entry an average of 8.22 points, which is pretty high, and while they don't give top marks every year, it seems as if Poland, under the old voting system at least, knew how to spot a winning entry. And that is the long-winded history of Poland in both Europe and the Eurovision Song Contest. I'm always fascinated to learn about countries' histories and end up discovering that they have long and complex events which shaped how their country developed on the continent. Now, if you've been listening to past episodes, you know that I put a pause on the Eurovision report due to a majority of the news being related to entries and national finals, which I don't want to focus too much on. However, there is actual Eurovision news to report, so this week, let's turn ourselves to the Eurovision report. Sweden has announced who will be hosting the Eurovision Song Contest 2024 in Malmö. Returning for the third time is Petra Mede, and she will be joined by Swedish-born, Canadian-raised, and Hollywood star Malin Ackerman. Petra hosted the contest on her own in 2013 and was joined in 2016 by the previous winner from 2015, Måns Zelmerlöw. While this isn't a record-breaking number of hostings, Petra is a modern-day Eurovision icon, and fans are thrilled to have her back to host. Malin's background is a little less known, having starred in various movies and other television productions. This was reported by the European Broadcasting Union on Eurovision.tv. This has been the Eurovision Report. And now it's time for Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I choose an entry that I find fascinating, enjoyable, or maybe it's terrible and completely forgettable. Since this is a Eurovision travel guide episode, I've gone ahead and selected a Polish entry to be this week's pick. Let's find out which entry gets Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the Polish entry for 2005, Czarna Dziewczyna, translated as Black Haired Girl, sung by Yvonne and Delphin, composer Łukasz Lezer, lyricist Ivan Komarenko, and Michał Siemiski. Ended up placing 11th in the semifinal with 81 points, only 5 points away from qualification. It got 10 points from Greece, 8 points from Germany and Ukraine, 7 points from Spain, and points from 14 other countries. This song gets Song of the Week because it is simple perfection. It is everything I want from 2014, but in a more lively package. This song is fast-paced, full of white and red. The dresses on the backing dancers are absolutely gorgeous, filled with extra fabric that waves into the air so majestically. The main male singer is wearing a retro-inspired outfit using the same material as the dancers, and this entry should have qualified. This is lively, celebratory, and there's an accordion which I can't resist one bit. Song of the Week goes to the musical sensation of Ivan and Delphin with their lively bop of Polish culture, which should have qualified. Poland was robbed in 2005. Overall, I'm not impressed with Poland at Eurovision, but they do have some notable entries, and I hope that Poland continues to develop its musical style. Maybe one day they'll reach their debut success or even surpass it with a win. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, you can get in touch on Instagram at ESC101podcast. You can also send an email to ESC101podcast@gmail.com. We're also on Tumblr, slowly playing catch up with our episode promotions. If you're on Spotify, you can vote in this week's poll and Q&A. Tell us your favorite Polish entry and vote on how Poland sits in your rankings of Eurovision countries. If you haven't already done so, please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice, as it helps us get discovered by other Eurovision fans and history enthusiasts. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. Next week, we are covering a Eurovision interval act which has roots in France, Denmark, the United States, and Canada. So stay tuned to see who we'll be covering next. You've been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.